Hi, everyone. Okay, I gave a bit of this shiur during, the first Shabbos after the war broke out, but I've done a little more research since the topic. I think most of you, I think one of two were here during my Shal Shudas talk, but I've done a little more research on the topic, so hopefully we'll all learn something new. So the topic is releasing prisoners in order to free hostages. It's obviously a very sensitive topic, and I'm going to just try to provide you some perspective of where at least, try not to say what we should do halakhically. I'm going to try to provide what in other circumstances in the past. Unfortunately, this is not the first time that the state of Israel has faced this dilemma. So the question is, what role, if any, has halakha played in this issue in previous unfortunate situations? So for the first 35 years of existence of the state of Israel, the official policy of the Israeli government, we don't negotiate with terrorists or hijackers. Everyone understood this approach, as this was consistent, with the position of the Shulchan Aruch, that we don't overpay for hostages, because it would only, again, I don't know if Ben-Gurion followed, his view on the halacha, Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, but this position of the Israeli government was consistent with actually halachic policy that it would only encourage terrorists to continue to kidnap more Israelis. There's a Gemara in Gittin, the first source. I didn't number the sources, but the first source, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Mem Hamed Aleph, says, obviously there's a big mitzvah, Pidyon Shvuah. There's a tremendous mitzvah. I can spend a whole shiur on how important it is to redeem captives. It's obviously very important. That's the easy part, but there's no conflict with that. We should try as much as we can to redeem captives. The Mishnah in Gittin says, we don't pay Yeser al Demehem. We don't pay more than their actual monetary value. Now, there's a question, what does that mean exactly? What is someone's monetary value? We might touch about what that means. It means we don't overpay because of tikkun ha'olam, for the betterment of society. Now, what does that mean, the betterment of society? The Gemara has two different approaches to what this means. Is it mishum duchaka de tzibura? Does it mean that if the community overpays, whatever the going rate. Remember, in those days, the old days of Mishnah Gemara, it was a financial thing. You went to the market, you got some bagels, some lox, some cream cheese, and a couple dozen slaves also. In other words, it was a monetary thing. So if you pay more for slaves to free captives, so then that will impoverish the community. That's one concern. Or maybe it's because then they will bring about, it will encourage them taking additional captives because they will see, like, I'll take more Jews captives and then we'll get more money. So maybe we don't want to let them know we're going to overpay for captives, and they're going to go out of their way to try to take more Jews as captives. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like this, rules like the second reason. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea Simon Reish Nun Beis Eif Dalad says, "Ein podin shvuyin yosir miknei demehem mipnei tikkun olam." We don't overpay for captives because of tikkun olam. Shelo yiyu ha'oivim mosrim atzmam aleihem lish shavusa. That so that the enemies don't exert more effort to take individuals captive. There are other pieces to the Shulchan Aruch, which we'll get back to in a bit. There's a story in Gittin which seems to complicate this ruling. And this ruling says don't overpay. But there are stories in the Gemara where people did overpay. There's a story in the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Nun Chasamad Aleph, Tadar Rabbanan, Maisa Barabi Yoshua ben Chananya. There's a story of Yoshua ben Chananya, Shaholach, Lekrach Gadol Shabaromi, that he went to the great city of Rome, Amar Lo, Tinok Echad Yesh Bebeis HaAsurim. There was a young boy. Tinok doesn't mean a baby. It means a baby. It's a young boy, a young lad, who's in jail. Yafei Nayim. Ah, so good looking. Tov Roe. He's attractive appearance. Ukvutso Sav, Stuarso Tatlim. Ah, the cutest curls. Okay, you're a cute looking kid who's in jail. In any case, the Gemara goes on. I like to keep the sources on two sides, so I skip some of the story. But part of the story is, he quotes the first half of a pasuk, and the kid can like quote the last half of the pasuk. Like, kid's apparently a genius. And so Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananyan, who was a great rabbi himself, said, Omar, he said, Muftachani ben bo shemora ha'orah b'Yisrael. I know that this young boy is going to become a great scholar. Okay, so how did he know that? Did he verify? Was that like appropriate, like not appropriate? Like, was he, I mean, he turned out he was right, but like, you know, can you tell when someone's a little kid? Okay, it's an interesting question. But for our purposes, I'll pay any price to redeem this kid because I know he's going to be a great Torah scholar. Amru lo zaz misham ad shepedo b'mamun harbe. He didn't move from there. He raised a lot of money to redeem him. V'lo yamim mu'atim ad shehora harab Yisrael. Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya was right. This individual became a great Torah scholar. And who was he? Manu, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Okay? He was a great rabbi, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. But what do we see from here? There's a story which seems to contradict our position that says don't overpay. Here, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya overpaid. So the question is, what are the exceptions to overpaying, and how does that relate to our situation? So someone is saying, so the Tosfos gives a whole bunch of reasons. It's very important to know what the reasons are, and do we accept those reasons? So Tosfos, I didn't bring the translation here, but he says, he gives a few possibilities. He says, maybe, lefisha yamuflag b'chachma. If you're going to be a gadol b'torah, a gadol ador, that's an exception. You can overpay for gadol ador. Inami bishas churban habayas alo shayach delo ligravu. Or maybe it's a time of destruction, so it's not a problem. Why would a time of destruction would be okay to overpay? So you can really give two different possible answers. Maybe you need to boost the morale, so you need to, even in times of destruction, you need to boost the morale, so you should overpay. Or maybe it won't, maybe in times of destruction where there's total chaos, it won't encourage additional kidnappings because they're doing it anyway. There's another Tosfos which says, Ki ika sakanas nefashos podim shvum yosar kdei demehem. Maybe the case with this little kid was that it was in life-threatening situation. Remember, in times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, we're talking about hostages, right? If you don't free hostages, what's going to happen? They may kill the hostages. In these times, maybe it was a money thing. It was a monetary thing. So maybe you don't overpay, but in cases of imminent danger, so maybe you do. Maybe you do redeem him. Now, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention anything about imminent danger. Now, that's an interesting question, right? You have one person, he's in imminent danger, right? If you don't redeem him, this could cost him his life. But if you overpay, then it may encourage them to, you know, capture many more hostages. How does this calculus come out? The Shulchan Aruch himself does not write about the leniency, about if imminent danger that you could be lenient. But there were rabbis. There was the Maharshal, the Yamshel Shlomo. I didn't translate it. I didn't bring the translation. If you turn the page, he writes Vehaidna. The Marshal lived in the 16th century. He says, Vehaidna, nowadays, Anshe Gomle Chasadim Be'eretz Tugarma. There were these really pious people in this land of Tugarma. Okay, and Vas, I think it's in Turkey somewhere. Vasmuchim Lahem Podim Hashvuim Yosef Yosef Michle Demehem. They overpaid. They know the community is going to be impoverished for this, but they're waiving that, and they're impoverishing their community, but they're overpaying. One of the reasons he says is because if they don't redeem him, we're concerned that what's going to happen to them. So they might kill them. And in times of danger, we redeem for more than their value. Now, one thing, if I were to, you know, ask you, how do we paskin according to halacha? In general, the rule is, once the Mishnah's written in the year 200, once the Mishnah's written, you don't argue on the Mishnah. Once the Gemara's written in the year 500, generally speaking, it means that all the Jewish people agree that we're going to be bound by the Gemara. You don't argue the Gemara. And generally speaking, when the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama are written in the 16th century, Shulchan Aruch for Sephardi practice, Ramah, where Ashkenazi practice differs, for the most part, we don't argue on the Shulchan Aruch Ramah, but it's not ironclad. And especially, usually first generation commentaries, you know, next generation on after Shulchan Aruch Ramah, sometimes they a lot more license to argue. This is an example where you have, again, if you just read the Shulchan Aruch, Yosef Cairo says, case of imminent danger, you cannot redeem, you cannot overpay, because we're concerned they might engage in more kidnappings. But there have been rabbis, the Maharshal, Yamshel Shlomo, the Radvaz as well. Apparently the custom was to, in many communities, that they did overpay. And the question is, so where does that leave us exactly? By the way, the Radvaz says, he was a rabbi who lived in Egypt, also in the 16th century. He says overpaying means overpaying the going rate for kidnapped victims. In other words, the question was overpaying means. Does it mean the going rate for a slave, or which is not a lot, or does it mean the going rate for kidnapped victims? That's an interesting question. But in our days, the issue is not about kidnapping for money. It's kidnapping to secure the release of Palestinian prisoners, and it's not about individuals or communities, it's about nations. So I'm saying it's a little different than the times of the Mishnah Gemara. The time of Mishnah Gemara was about, would a community pay to try to free an individual, right, for him to be free? Would they pay enough money? And the concern is, if they don't pay enough money, or if they pay too much, then maybe they'll kidnap more people to get more money. Here, we're talking about a little bit different. We're talking about potential dangers, about releasing Palestinians, and some of them who may have blood on their hands. So it's obviously, is there a different rule if you're talking about a nation versus an individual or a community? Now, even before the Israeli policy, official policy change in 1985, there was talk of changing Israeli policy in response to the hijacking of Air France Flight 139. You know what year that was? 76, Entebbe. Right. So during the 5 days before the Entebbe raid of July 4th, 1976, the government secretly approached the chief rabbi, the Sephardi chief rabbi of the time, Rav Avadi Yosef, and asked, it's interesting, like, this is a secular government, but they asked him, because, you know, sometimes, you know, do we care about halacha? Do not care about halacha? Like, okay, whether it's like, you know, kosher or Shabbos, okay, but like this, like, it's an ethical issue, but like, obviously the Torah is what to say about this. So he wants to know whether it was halachically permitted to negotiate with terrorists. Now, how much would they take into consideration what Rav Avadi Yosef said? I'm not sure, but they asked him the Shaila. He secretly, what? Maybe, could be. So he secretly gathered Gedolim at the time to discuss the issue. So what's interesting is that what I have, so the last two sources I have, the second and third source I have on the second side is, you'll see, this is from a tshuva that Rav Avadi Yosef wrote, Yabia Omer, I mean, it's very long teshuvah. This is just a small excerpt. And he's discussing this. Hitzigu, you know what the next word after hitzigu is? Ultimatum. I figure it means ultimatum, correct? The hijackers presented an ultimatum. Shebo darshu ki betoch arba'im u'shmona sha'ot yeshucharu chavrehem. That they demand their comrades in 48 hours be released. How many? Arba'im mechablim hakluim b'Yisrael. So they said they want 40 terrorists to be released within 48 hours. Vimlav, and if not, Hem yifkuub bibnei ha'aruva hanim sa'im biyadam. Then they would harm the hostages that they're holding. Vahu al ta'ashela. It's a tshuva. You look in Yabia Omer. Rav Avadi Yosef wrote a whole series of tshuvos. So one of his tshuvos was on this question. It's not like he says, Ha'im al pi halacha yesh l'shachrer et ha'machablim ha'kluim b'Yisrael k'drishas ha'chotfim. Are, according to halacha, are you allowed to free these terrorists that are in jail in the Jewish people, as the chotfim, as the hijackers seek, amenas la'atzil es chayim shel ha'chatufim ha'yudim, in order to save the lives of the Jews who were kidnapped. O shema yeshomer, maybe you can say, shemavad sha'yidei kach potchim petach l'chatifot nosafot. Maybe it will invite future abductions. That maybe it's going to encourage future kidnappings. This Shaila. Od yesh lachu, it's also concerned. Shekarov levada, it's almost certain. Shemachablim asher yeshucharu miklaom, that the hijackers, the terrorists who will be freed from their cells, miklaom, Yenasu lachdor shenit limdinat Yisrael laharog v'lirtzoch anashim nashim etaf. They're going to commit further acts of terror. Now, there's two different concerns here. Number one, that it will encourage more terrorists to engage in greater hijackings, more hijackings. And number two, that the prisoners that they will free, in all likelihood, will engage in acts of terror.
Both warnings, we should
pay. I understand. V'nimsa shebichdei lahatzil et hayudim ha'chatufim mivadei sakada, and what emerges is to save the Jews from this certain danger. Mamidim esa yishuv b'frat ba'arei asfar al kol pari b'safik tzarkad ha'mamish. And now you're placing the population of Israel, especially those in the border cities, in circumstances of real potential danger. Now, this I found this, or someone sent this to me, Rav Usher Weiss. Right, he's a big postdoc nowadays. And this is from an article. He sent his weekly daf. He sent the weekly daf last month. And he writes the following. Bishut Yabia Omer Lamaran Hagon Ravad Yosef. He talks about this tshuva. Harich Ma'od Bidarko B'Shele Zu. Vevi Yam Shel Makorot. Ravad Yosef, his methodology in writing tshuvos, he is an encyclopedic mind. He just quotes everything. He goes on pages and pages and pages and pages. And like he lines them up. Okay, 35 said Usher, 34 said Mutter. Okay, it's Usher. I mean, I'm not sure if that's how it works, but he just quotes everything. Like, you know, certain, it's interesting. That's another interesting topic. Like, what's the methodology of Psak Halacha? How do you come to a determination? Do you find which argument is more compelling? I mean, sure, does it also? Or do you look at how many Rishonim and Achronim, how many rabbis you quote? He just quotes everything under the sun. So he says he brought a sea of sources. I know it's only in Hebrew. Umaskanato, in his conclusion. What was his conclusion? Shemuter lememshala lishachrer mechablim kedei liftot hashvim. He thought that it was permitted for the government to free the terrorists in order to redeem the hostages. Va'af misaper v'holech, and also he goes and he tells sheba odo yoshe biyachad im od gedolei Torah, and he tells that while he was still deliberating with the other great rabbis, they're sitting in a room. He giya alehem rosh hamemshala Yitzchak Rabin. So apparently the prime minister Yitzchak Rabin approaches them. Levaser lahem. He says, your services are no longer needed. Thank you so much. Because, Baruch Hashem, they basically freed the hostages. There's, while the rabbis were deliberating, and apparently the Gedolim came to the conclusion that they were allowed to free the hijacker, the terrorist. We're going to see why in a bit. But what's interesting is while they were deliberating, they heard that that they had freed the hostages. And then Vahagon Rav Avad Yosef Mishabech Umahalel et Pulat Hachilutz, and he praised the act, you know, the of the army, Vakosef Shir Vahalel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he wrote the song and praise to Hashem Shehifla Chasdo Imanu, so that he did his damage his kindness for us. Uvim Mahaduras Tavshin Samach Dal Shekibalti Mehagon Rav Avad Yosef Sasam velo perash mi hayu hagdolei Torah sheyashua al hameducha. And apparently, like, there were different editions of his responsa, and apparently in the edition that was dated Tavshin Samach Dalid, so where are we now? We're in Tavshin, where are we? Peches, right? we're paid dalit. So this was 20 years ago. So in the 2003 edition of his responsa, he just saw some. He didn't say who these gedolim were. Ah, and in fact, I looked in my Bar Ilan, like I have a copy of my Bar Ilan responsa literature. He doesn't say who were the rabbis who were with him, who made these discussions. And what's interesting to me is that I was listening when I did some initial research, and I was told that Rav Avadya Yosef his view was like a das yachid, a singular view, and it was a minority view. But most poskim, most authorities disagree with him. But what's pretty clear is you can see the names that he was with. Who were the rabbis? Again, it's not, if you look at, I guess, my edition of the Bar Ilan response, it's not listed. But in a later edition, who did he sit with? He adds in the Ha'ara Shulayim, in the footnotes, Sheyashav im Maran v'Rabbanan, Rav Yashiv, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Zolti, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. There's a Rav Goldschmidt, I'm not sure who that was, another big gadol, not the one from Russia. Rav Shol Yisraeli. Rav Shol Yisraeli was the leading religious Zionist rabbi at the time. He was a former Rosh Yeshiva, Merkos Harav, and Rav Betzir Abba Shaul, I think he's Sephardi. Basically, Vechlitu Sherashait Memshal Yisrael Nahel Masa Umatan Lashachrer Mechablim Tumar Tashrim Shebideyam. And he says that they were allowed to. All these rabbis, so this is not a singular view, these great rabbis basically paskin that the government is allowed to deal with the terrorists about free the hostages. But then in the day, when they freed the captives, obviously, four Jews were killed, but they're very happy with this. So what was Rav Avadya Yosef's argument? So again, this tshuva goes on and on, but I'll summarize what his argument was. Rav Avadya Yosef's argument is the following. So there is, I'll try to explain as best as I can. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi. There's a Yerushalmi which says the following. So Reish Lakish was this, Reish Lakish was the, who, he was the Chavrus of who? Who was the Chavrus of? Who is this? Rav Yochanan, right? So there's a story, Reish Lakish, so he was a very prominent Amora, Talmudic sage in Eretz Yisrael. So what was his profession before he was a robber? He was a highwayman. He was a thug. I mean, before he became a great Amora, he meets Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, Rabbi Yochanan, I'll give you my sister, and if he learned Torah, and so it's a win-win for everyone. Okay, the ending didn't turn out well between the two of them, but that's not our topic now. The point was, Rabbi Reish Lakish was this, he was a strong man gadol b'Torah, okay? Why am I telling you this? So there's a story in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud, that basically there was an individual who basically was captured by thieves. So one rabbi, his name is Rabbi Yonasan, and he said, okay, it's time to prepare the shrouds, time to prepare the tachrichin. It's over for him. But Reish Lakish is like, no, I'm going to go, and either I'll be killed or they'll be killed. I'm going to kill or I'll be killed. So he's like, he's going, okay? So that raises a whole host of questions, which is, this person who was taken captive, if he wasn't going to be freed, then he would definitely die. For Reish Lakish, he's putting himself in potential danger. Are you allowed to, obligated to put yourself in potential danger in order to save a life, right? I mean, in the old days when it might have been difficult to do a kidney transplant. So are you supposed to do a kidney transplant? Nowadays, it's not a topic. Nowadays, kidney transplants are pretty safe. They're pretty, the chance of something happening is very rare. So, but I'm saying when initially the concept of kidney donation came out and it was a potential dangerous situation, the question is, can you put yourself in suffix sakhara, in a doubtful dangerous situation, to save someone from a definite danger, right? So Yerushalmi seems to say, look, what did Reish Lakish do? He put himself in a doubtful situation to save someone's life. Most, the classic Rishonim, the rabbis on the Gemara, who comment on the Gemara, the classic halachic Rishonim do not quote this Talmud Yerushalmi. Now, Gemaras can quote a whole host of opinions. The question is, we don't necessarily follow everything in the Gemara. The Gemara cites different opinions by different rabbis, but we don't necessarily follow every single one. And the question is, which positions are adopted by the Shulchan Aruch? None of the classic halachic rishon, the Rush, the Rif, the Rabban, quote this Gemara according to halacha. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it, so it seems we don't hold like this. The Rav Avadya Yosef says, no, but what does it mean? It means that what? You're not allowed to put yourself in a doubtful situation where you could potentially injure yourself to save someone's life. You don't have to do that, right? Because you don't have to put yourself in danger. But he thinks you should save someone who will definitely die if you don't harm him, if it will create a suffix sakana, a doubtful situation for someone else. In other words, I don't have to put myself in danger, in potential danger, to save someone's life, but I have to save someone who will die, imminent danger, right? He seems to paskin like the marshal, even if it might result in potential danger for someone else. What if it's 90% chance, 50%, look at statistics? I don't care about it. And in fact, he cites a position, again, to assist him. Again, you could disagree with this. He cites the noted Yehuda, Yecheskel Landau. It's a famous autopsy tshuva. Yecheskel Landau lived in the 18th century. He was asked, are you allowed to have an autopsy on a body? So what did he say? He says, an autopsy is forbidden unless, what? Unless it will directly help a current patient now. In other words, what's an autopsy? It's nivel ames. You're desecrating a body. Are you allowed to desecrate a body? The answer is maybe. Depends for what purpose. If it's for pikuach nefesh, if it's to save a life, you're allowed to desecrate a body. If somehow, again, that's not a topic, but after someone dies and you can donate their skin to save someone's life, right? So that you can do. Nivel mace, you're desecrating the body. No, but you're doing it to save someone's life. It's permitted. Question is, what's the pikuach nefesh? So maybe you'll argue what? So, you know what, if I do an autopsy on this body, we can learn more about the human body, how he died, and it will advance science, and it will be very helpful in the future, right? So eventually it will save a life. So the question is, how far do you go? So he has a famous position that we talk about pikuach nefesh, when, you know, pikuach nefesh to save a life. When is that override? When is pikuach nefesh win out? That is only when it's a pikuach nefesh, what's called lifaneinu. It means a present pikuach nefesh. In other words, an autopsy is forbidden if it will not directly help a current patient now, even though it may contribute to medical knowledge and save lives in the future. So similarly, Rav Avadya Yosef argues that we should be concerned with freeing hostages who face imminent danger, even if it means possibly putting Israeli citizens in danger in the future by freeing many Palestinian prisoners who likely will engage in acts of terror in the future. Again, many could disagree with that. The Rav Shaul Yisraeli made another argument. He was one of the poskim who met with Rav Avadya Yosef. He wrote a tshuva on the topic. Again, I didn't. Yes. So it's a good question. So what did he say? He says it's permissible. I mean, the language in the tshuva is that it's permissible to engage and then let the government decide. It doesn't say that you have to, but you're permissible because there could be overall security. There's what to argue. But it seems Rav Avadya Yosef's position, like, let's put it this way. There is a national element which could play out in both directions. To the extent that he's quoting the argument of the way Rav Asher Weiss says it, said they decided that they're allowed to. Because maybe they also are aware that there could be some national considerations and maybe you shouldn't do it, maybe because of some security reasons. But it would seem that if Rav Avadya Yosef is using his arguments about that you would have to save someone's life, it would seem, to put someone in danger. It would seem that it's appropriate, but you're right. I'm not. It's a good question. I want to double check that, and I'll send that. I think the way Rav Asher Weiss says it is that they're permitted. It's not 100% clear to me whether he's saying that because there are some national considerations as well.
There's
negotiation as well, right? It depends what you're giving up. Right, right. But the answer is that even if you could statistically demonstrate it, we don't know, statistically demonstrate that it will net cost more, well, likely, because you can't know for sure, cost more lives, we don't take that calculus consideration. And there are those who disagree with that. But I'm saying is, we look at Pikuach Nefesh, what's in front of us. Again, you make the same argument. If you really believe, let's say someone knew statistically, if you could do autopsies on a bunch of bodies, then you would know statistically you would save more lives in the future. We still wouldn't do it because it's not Lefanenu. That's not in front of us. Rav Shol Yisraeli, he was one of the rabbis, one of the posts who met Rav Adi Yosef. He wrote a tshuva about this topic, and he says the following. He makes an interesting argument. He says, says that a person is allowed to redeem himself. I skipped that piece. In Reish Nun Beis Sif Dalet, he says that the community should not, think about it, the community should not redeem someone from captivity. Because why? Because then, they shouldn't overpay to redeem someone. Because why? And then they're going to redeem more people from captivity, and that'll be bad, right? That'll be the overall net, it will be a bad situation. However, the Shulchan Aruch says that, well, a person can redeem himself. Someone who's independently wealthy is allowed to overpay for himself. Right? I'm allowed to do what I can do what I want. I can redeem myself for any amount. Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to redeem yourself. The community can't, but you're allowed to redeem for yourself. So he makes an interesting argument. Again, he says that you can redeem yourself for any amount you want. I think when I gave this shiur on Shal Shudah, someone told me about this. Like, there's like, terrorist insurance or something. Yeah. Okay. So like. Yeah. Kidnapping insurance. So again, I don't know the details. I haven't read the fine print. Like, you know, depends who kidnaps you. But I don't know what it says exactly. But you have it. So what does it say?
Okay. So what it does is avoid negotiators.
Right.
To potentially negotiate and pay a ransom.
Ah, okay. So for ransom, but it's not going to help if someone like has.
No. Yeah. Right.
They're not doing it. But you're saying in other words. In other words, they're authorized to pay up to $1 million or $10 million, whatever the policy limits.
I think it was very popular when Somali pirates were doing the last.
Okay.
Business. Yeah,
yeah.
It was accepted as a business.
Okay. So this is the argument. He says just like a person can redeem himself for any amount, so too you can buy insurance that someone will redeem you if you're taken captive, right? Kidnapping insurance. So that person is his messenger. Now, is the insurance that would be allowed? So, and his argument is that the Jewish people have a responsibility towards the military, because when I'm serving as a soldier, so there is an unwritten agreement that the military is going to pay whatever in order to free me. Now, whether that's true or not, but that's what he's saying, and therefore. And therefore, Jewish people have a responsibility towards the military. They can redeem their soldiers, even in a case where there's a concern that the terrorists will be encouraged to take further captives. Interesting argument. On May 21st, 1985, the Jibril Agreement took place. There were two soldiers, I remember that were captured in 1982 in Lebanon. And a third IDF prisoner, so these three individuals were released for 1,150 Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails. We thought that's crazy, it's a lot. Of course, the Gilad Shalit deal, right? So they had three who were released for 1,150 Palestinian prisoners. Among the prisoners released were someone named Kozo Okamoto. He was one of the perpetrators of the Lod Airport massacre in May 1972, was serving a life sentence. Also Ahmed Yassin, who was the spiritual leader of Hamas, who was sentenced to 13 years in 1983. When the Israelis did give back hundreds of criminals and terrorists in Israeli jails in exchange for a few captured Israeli soldiers, they were strongly criticized, as people feared this would lead to an increase in immediate terrorism. And guess what? It did. Okay. Rav Shlomo Gorin, the former chief rabbi of Israel, wrote an article in Hatsofeh against the Jibril deal. He said, we shouldn't pay more, we shouldn't overpay for captives. Tosfos says, yes, when there's a danger, we pay for more. But he says the Ramban and the Rashba argue on Tosfos. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't paskin like Tosfos. And he says also all captivity in ancient times was dangerous. And Still, nevertheless, the Mishnah says you don't overpay because that will encourage kidnappers to kidnap more Jews and endanger the public. Also, freeing many terrorists definitively endangers the public because they will all be free to attack Israel. However, some of the generals of the army explained at the time that this action served actually the long-term needs of the state of Israel, not the short-term. The act of returning many soldiers to free a soldier who was held hostage showed every soldier in the Israeli army that the government will do anything to get back its captured soldiers, even giving back known terrorists. And some generals argued that this value, that soldiers know that no matter what, the government will do anything to save them, is an important concept for the Israeli army and for each soldier. The long-term effect of this knowledge is that since every soldier is aware of the lengths to which the government will go on his or her behalf, this will encourage the Israeli soldiers to fight harder and be more loyal and more effective. The long-term may supersede the short-term harm that terrorists may cause. And in fact, after Rav Shlomo Goren wrote his article in Atzofet criticizing the Jibril Agreement, so the chief rabbi, the then chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, Rav Chaim David Alevi, wrote a response back. And it's only in Hebrew, but I'm going to translate it. He says, that he makes this argument. He says, Ve'im besvara skinan. If we're going by logic, Hine Kosev Hagon Rav Shlomo Goren B'mamaro Hanal Kama Pamim She'iska Zos Hagvirav Hagdila Higbirav Higdilas Kocha Mispari Ve'echute Shalmaratzchim. He says that this act, this business of freeing, of trading, or whatever, of releasing prisoners, terrorists, for Israeli soldiers, will increase the number and quality of the. And the type of murderers are they shichur mispar kol gadol shemechablim mubanim, because you're freeing a lot of terrorists. V'zos svar nechonhi. This is a good argument against freeing terrorists for in order to free hostages. Ella she nishal na and but we need to ask. V'chi osam she'asku bitzo iska zos lo evinu davar pashat zeh. Says, I understand. Do you think the generals who did the deal didn't realize this? He says, you don't think they understand this? Like, we think everything people are doing are politically motivated. They said, at least 1985, you don't think that the Sar Bitachon, the Minister of Defense, didn't understand this? You don't think that the government understood this issue that's going to lead to greater terrorism? You think they don't care about the lives of every Jew? He said there's another important factor, Vehi HaMoral Shel Chayalei Tzahal. And this is the morale of the soldiers of Tzahal, Ba'asher Chayal Yodeh, by the fact that a soldier knows, She'im Yipol Bashvi Medinat Yisrael, Kula Nitzeven Me'acharav, that if he falls in captive, then everyone's standing behind him, L'shachro, to free him. Yimsor Nafsho Bishat Krav Lo Pachar Bara. He will give his life. He will be sacrifice himself in times of battle without fear and trepidation. Achim Yufala Din Chen Polim Shvuim Yisal Demeyam. But if we're not going to overpay, whatever that means, for captives, Gamik Razebish Bashar Chayalim Nishachim Bishlichut Haumal Milchama. Then when soldiers are being sent out to war, Azmin Astam Yomar Kol Chayabli Bolden, a soldier is going to say in his heart, Mutav La Segev Veloy Po Bashvi. Better that I retreat rather than fall into captivity. And who can tell what's a greater security threat to the Jewish people? Right? Kocham shel machablim adei shichur chavrayim is it worse, the power of the strength of the machablim, you know, by the terrorists, by freeing their friends, or chizuk moral shel chayalei tzahal, or the strength of the morale of the soldiers, b'melchamot atidot, in future battles, im tikreta chasro, if this will happen, chas v'shalom. So in other words, Rav Chaim David Alevi says that the government acted correctly. They will continue to, he also says they continue to kidnap Jews regardless of what we do. But if an Israeli soldier sees the state of Israel decided that the state will not, that the government will not redeem Israeli soldiers for a high price, then he or she will prefer retreat over capture. Only a general who knows the entire situation and has the long-term perspective can make the judgment if the short-term harm of releasing the terrorists who may kill Israeli civilians is worth the long-term benefit of a better and superior army that might be better able to defeat the enemy at war. It's interesting. There's like the short term, there's the immediate term, the short term, and then the long term. And again, there could be different factors. There's like... Okay, right, good, right. So it's interesting that this, 100%, right, this only talks about soldiers, not about civilians. But I'm just saying it's interesting. There's the immediate, there's Rav Avad Yosef is the immediate right now wins out over something future. And then we're saying, no, but even if the future, it could lead to more terrorist attacks, but maybe the overall morale of the soldiers, so that might be worth it. So now that's what he's arguing, is that if the experts, whoever they are, determine that the enhanced power of its fighting force outweighs the damage from the released terrorists, then it would be valid. This is likely based on the idea that there are different rules for the government. I'll give you an example. We know that pikuach nefesh, a life-threatening situation, supersedes everything. But if it really supersedes, except for, say, the three cardinal sins, right? You have to be willing to die for adultery, idolatry, and murder. But everything else, right, pikuach nefesh wins out. If you're saying that that's the most important factor, you can never go to war, right? Because pikuach nefesh, life-threatening situation. So the minchas chinuch discusses the idea of what's called hilchos tzibur. There are laws for individuals, something called laws for the tzibur, for the nation, which necessitates us looking at long-term considerations, and that can go in either direction. On October 18, 2011, Gilad Shalit, who was captured by Hamas in 2006, was released in exchange for 1,027 Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. Is that exchange justifiable according to Allah? How do we balance the morale of the soldiers, the idea that if you're taken into custody, we will do anything to get you out, versus the concern that many were freed, perpetrated acts of terror? What about now? How much should we overpay for the hostages? Will it lead to more hostage taking, or will the terrorists continue to try to take us hostage regardless of how much we pay for the release of hostages? Will freeing Palestinian terrorists for Israeli soldiers result in more deaths, or will leaving hostages in Gaza paralyze much of the country? I think the question now, at least my own way of looking at this, it's interesting, like in the past, because we really weren't dealing with civilians. We're talking about, for the most part, we're dealing with soldiers who were taken captive. But we've also seen the paralyzing effect that that hostages, even civilian hostages, have had on society. Now, as you can tell society, well, like you can tell them, like the calculus doesn't add up. We can't free all these mechablim, all these terrorists who are in jail because it's going to likely lead to more deaths. But the question is, will society accept it? Again, this is my own non-halakhic read of the situation. From what I read in the media, is that I think that Israel, the Israeli society, from the right to the left, for the most part, overwhelmingly believes, or whatever the world says, we cannot end the war with Hamas in charge of the Gaza Strip. It seems to me right now that seems to be the overwhelming majority. So in other words, that's something that, like, if Hamas will say, okay, we'll release all the hostages if you stop your campaign and we remain in power. I think that society, Israeli society, won't accept that. Will Israeli society, how paralyzed will it be if many hostages remain in captivity, and the cost of that versus, putting more murderers on the street in Gaza? So this is, I think, an open question. What I'm suggesting is, even though in the past, again, Rav Shaul Yisraeli's insurance argument, kidnapping insurance argument, only works for soldiers, but I would argue that Rav Chaim David Halevi's argument about making considerations about what will a soldier say next time, is this going to paralyze society? In other words, how much is considered enough? How many terrorists with blood on their hands can you free without paralyzing society? What are the calculations? These are complicated questions. I don't think there's a definitive halakhic answer to this question, because depending on what the deal is, different experts will provide different perspectives on what's good for Israeli society or not. I think it's very, I wrote this in a blog a few weeks ago, I said I think it's very hard to opine on what's good for Israel or not without meeting the families of the hostages and seeing Israeli society in general. I think that, I just happen to think, my own inclination is that like when we're a little distant, we probably will make more of a calculus. We'll look at the statistics and we'll say that, we probably can live, I think, I could be wrong. I think when you're a little more distant, you would say that, we can live with Israelis remaining as hostages, because by freeing them, you do the math, it will likely lead to many more deaths. Gilad Shalit, many people question, the Gilad Shalit deal, one person freed many terrorists, and many of them who were involved in this October 7th attack. I think my feeling is that we not living in Israeli society, so we can understand that, you do the math, so we can deal with certain, unfortunately, not a great situation, obviously, some Israelis remaining hostages. We can't free people with blood on their hands, because it will lead to more deaths. At the same time, I think that it's not really our call. I mean, it's obviously not our call, but I think that our brothers and sisters in Israel may not be able to deal with it. Even if they know that the calculus will be that more Israelis will be killed. I mean, think about what goes on. Sometimes you have chayalim who try to free a hostage, and many of them, and like one hostage, and you have, unfortunately, a bunch of chayalim are willing to risk their lives in something. Why? Because they feel like this is such a traumatic event of having this one hostage is traumatized the entire state of Israel. Now, can you change society's perspective? Maybe, but right now, not sure. But I think it's important to understand whatever calculus we have in America, our brothers, what will our brothers and sisters in Israel be able to live with? And what will paralyze the country, and what will place a danger on the country? And I hope this discussion will only be halacha, not lamaisa, and Israel will figure out a way to free the rest of our hostages without these challenging considerations. But I think that's what's going on. This is, I want to again share with you a perspective of how we've dealt with this issue in the past, and how I think, again, on an individual level, the question is, do you care about the here and now? Right, versus the calculation of the future. There is a position, Rav Avad Yosef and other Gedolim seem to say that is an important factor. But then there's the broader societal factor, and I think that can go in either direction. You can say long term it's going to result in more deaths, versus will that paralyze society or not, and is it worth it, the price to pay? So not an easy, I can't tell you definitively what they should do, but I think these are the factors, and hopefully we're more informed with what the halacha has to say about it, where halacha feels it can be relevant, and where halacha says, these are the general considerations, and this is what generals and experts should think about when they're making these considerations.